Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I am pretty excited because this is actually maybe the most unusual podcast I've done because I've got Aaron Hagel and Tim Slowakowski. How'd I do, Tim? Pretty good?
Slowakowski? Yeah, that's incredible. Most people take about five tries, so.
And I practiced. I totally practiced. But anyhow, they made a film that was at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival like 1 month ago. In November of 2022, we had the documentary Party Dream, which took home the Grand Jury Award for Best Feature Film Documentary. Party Dream, these guys know that I'm just like a big-ass fan of this movie. I love it. And of all the weird coincidences, it screened and had its LA theatrical premiere at Sherman Oaks Film Festival in November. And now, 3-4 weeks later, it's released digitally. It's available VOD. So maybe I should just throw it over to you two right away to say like your main page where people can find links and stuff to watch it. Because, I mean, if you can listen to us discuss this movie and not want to see it, then you should stop listening because, like, you have to see this movie. Like, this podcast is about indie film, and this is an indie doc about an indie band. There's nothing more indie than Party Dream. So I'll shut up and let one of you say where people can find it best.
Yeah, basically all you got to remember is Party Dream Movie, and that'll pretty much get you everywhere. Like, it's at Party Dream Movie on Twitter and on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok we even have, which we're still trying to figure out. But yeah, if you just kind of go anywhere and type in Party Dream Movie, all one word, you'll find us. And, you know, the best thing to do also, if you're interested, is check out the trailer, which would be, you just go to YouTube and type in Party Dream Documentary. You'll find that there. And if that wets your whistle, then the next thing you do is you can go to Amazon, iTunes, Vudu, YouTube, Vimeo, pretty much any place that'll let you buy or rent movies, and including cable companies, you can get it there. So lots of choices.
And we have also a physical copy of the DVD you can get on Amazon as well, which is pretty cool.
That is cool. I have to admit, I got rid of all my media, but when people have like a physical, something physical, it takes me back.
Yeah, we've actually been getting a lot of people asking us, because what's cool now about the process is we just released on December 9th. So we're getting a ton of feedback. And the first wave of feedback, most of it is like old Gil Manterra Party Dreams fans who cannot believe that this movie is out, because no one had any clue whatsoever that this was coming. So these are fans, like the hardcore fans, who are like, oh my God, this, I can't believe this is a thing. Where can I get it? So a lot of people are hitting us up and saying, I want the physical copy. Are you guys doing that? So luckily we are. Yeah. On Amazon, you can find the DVD. So we've had a lot of people hitting us up for that, which it's been so much fun getting the feedback finally after all this time making the film.
Yeah, right. And yeah, I probably failed to mention, I just mentioned the film and I said it was about an indie band. But yeah, the name of the band is Gil Manterra's Party Dream, and the film is Party Dream. And I could see why fans would be so into that, because they probably wanted CDs all their lives and like couldn't get them. So like to finally get a physical, something physical that relates to the band is probably like something a fan has wanted forever.
Oh yeah. I mean, like, just like Tim was saying, you know, fans are like, can't believe this movie's been made. And Tim and I talked about it many times. Like, if we didn't make this and we found out somebody was making a movie about Gil and Donnie, we'd be pumped. So like, it's been a really cool response that people are excited. We're excited. And yeah, it's been great so far.
Awesome. All right. Well, before we dive into it too far, although we could do whatever we want here. This is a free country. But I would normally, before we talk about the film, like find out about your personal histories and like what brought you two together. What I happen to know, because we did a Q&A like 3 weeks ago at the festival, that I kind of have a clue what brought it all together. But now we can do it without time constraints and whatnot. So, although I will add, I'll try to add my super compliment, which is, yeah, I mean, you mentioned Gil Manterra's Party Dream and Gil and the Ultimate Donnie, who are the brothers that make up the band. And like I told you, I thought that when I first started this film, because I don't read anything on Film Freeway that people submit films through. Like, I just watch stuff pure. I just want the filmmaker's vision to just be what I experience. So if you don't show the title to the end credits, I don't know the title to the end credits. Like, that's, I try to be a purist. And I started your film, and I don't know how long, 5-10 minutes, I was thinking, wow, this is a really well-made mockumentary. Like, they cast this band perfectly. They made it look like it's VHS. These actors are amazing. The music they found, they wrote great music for this. Like, this is, and so I broke my rule and I started like looking up shit while I'm watching. And I like come across the Wikipedia page for Gil Manzarek's Bar Dream. I'm like, fucking hell, this band is real. This is real. This is documentary.
Well, now I'm pissed off because I think your idea is even better than our idea. So maybe we need to do that. The mockumentary version.
Biopic coming up next.
Yeah.
You know, in all seriousness, if they refuse to reform and they have every right not to reform, maybe you should recast them and do a Monkees kind of thing.
Yeah, sounds good. That'll be next.
All right. Well, anyhow, so that's, I'll stop trying to praise the film for a minute. And you two want to say a little bit about your histories, where you come from? And
yeah, sure. I mean, our big origin story is the Second City, Chicago. So we met at the Second City training program that they do there, where you can go and learn improv and sketch comedy and all that stuff. There's like a, it's like a couple years long that you go through. And we met in like the second course. And at the time, oh, geez, we were like, both of us were in our 20s. Aaron was an elementary school teacher. I was working as a temp, in downtown Chicago, just like doing anything I could to pay rent. I was also doing some music writing, and stuff like that, freelance. But yeah, we met in the Second City class and pretty quickly realized we had the same sensibility, like the same comedy. Then we also pretty quickly found out we both love the same types of music, which led to, you know, many a night hanging out at Aaron's house on Bissell Street. We'd get together, get a few beers, and we'd pick out a different music documentary to watch. So we had like all kinds that, you know, we'd get the DVDs for, and then we'd, all right, what's it going to be tonight? Oh, well, tonight it's going to be Springsteen at Hammersmith Odeon, 1975. Let's watch that one. And then, okay, next week, what are we going to do? Well, it's how about the concert for Bangladesh with George Harrison? So we would do it like that. And then, yeah, so we just kept doing the comedy thing alongside that and becoming friends at the same time. But yeah, it was like a couple year process of going through the Second City training program. And then, and Aaron, if you want to tell how then we started our comedy group based off of that.
I was going to, let me jump in. Were you both like, Illinois locals? Were you Chicago guys growing up?
Yeah, we're both from the burbs. I'm from the northwest side. I grew up like a couple miles away from O'Hare Airport, and Tim is with southwest burbs. Yeah. So funnily enough, I mean, I'm a little bit older than Tim, but like location wise we're like nowhere near each other as far as like where we grew up. But then we both lived in the city, like Tim was saying, you know, we met at Second City and all that. Which, and he was just talking about the origin story for our sketch group, which ties into Gil Manzarek's Party Dream. So but yeah, the whole story with that was, it was a cold like January night. There's a band from England called Art Brood in town. My wife and I reluctantly went to the show cause it was so cold. And that show was so great. And those guys were really funny, and they had, they were coming back to town, I think a couple months later. This was March, 2006. So I told Tim, I'm like, we got to go see these guys. I saw them. They're awesome. They're really funny. And so we took our wives and a couple friends. We went to Metro in Chicago, which is like one of the bigger places. And that's when Tim ran into one of his buddies from high school, right?
Yeah, we were literally standing in line at the Metro waiting to go in to see this band, Art Brute. And one of my friends who I hadn't seen in a while just kind of randomly came up to me, and he's like, oh, hey, man, what's going on? Who are you here to see? And I was like, oh, well, Art Brute, like, you know, kind of who else am I here to see? That's who the headliner is. He said, no, you're not here to see the headliner. You're here to see the opening band. He's like, they're Gil Manzarek's Party Dream, and you need to get up there right now because they're about to start. And I was like, Gil Manzarek's Party Dream? Like, he's like, yes, trust me, just go up there right now. You're going to regret it if you miss these guys. So it's kind of funny because, like, unless I ran into this guy, I wouldn't have gone upstairs. We would have taken our time to see the headliner instead, and we wouldn't be here talking to you now. I highly doubt, because that was like the thing that started everything with Gil Manterra's Party Dream. So luckily we did go upstairs and we watched them do their opening act, and it was unbelievable. It's the ultimate what the fuck moment for us, like, which we really love when we see bands or see any kind of art or movies or anything like that. What I'm looking for most of the time is what the fuck, like, I haven't seen this before. This is innovative. This is different. This is unique. And they were certainly that, like, they were from the get go, like, you know, the lead singer, Ultimate Donnie, was telling these crazy stories. And, like, I think he was like eating an apple at one point and then tossed it into the crowd. And then the music was just so different from anything we'd really ever heard before. So it just combined all these different things. And we just were looking at each other like, this is insane. So then the very next day, went back to Aaron's house on Bissell Street. And this time we were inspired by seeing Gil Manterra's Party Dream. So we came up with our sketch comedy group, which we called Merchandise. And we were just so inspired by how crazy these guys were that we were like, let's us do something like that. Let's put ourselves out there and start doing a sketch group, which we did the very next day.
Yeah. Right. So their level of creativity made you say, well, man, if they're putting themselves out there, it's time for us to take a risk.
Yeah, for sure. With comedy, of course, you know, and that was our thing with our sketch group. We were trying to think outside the box, do things a little bit differently, do weirder shit than most other sketch groups would probably do. Our thing was almost kind of like Gil and Donnie in a way, where we didn't want a middle of the road type comedy. It was like, you're either going to get it or you're not. And we were 100% cool with that. And we started off doing videos. We did, I don't know, maybe we ended up doing like maybe 15 videos. We did, shows, we did festivals, all that. And in fact, actually the very last sketch show we did in Chicago, we called it, Tim said our group's was called Merchandise. And we made a mockumentary about us, and it was called Merchandise's Last Waltz, based off of the Last Waltz, but, you know, Scorsese of the band. So that was our cool little nod to one of our favorite music documentaries that we used to watch quite a bit. So that was cool.
And I apologize if you said it. And around, what year was that? What year did you see them?
And then, yeah, it was March of 2006 that we saw them. Tim and I had met the year before. And then we just started, every time we were hanging out, you know, like you said, we're drinking beers, watching movies, you know, music and stuff, and dicking around. And one day we're like, oh, we should start writing this stuff down. And that's how, like, our comedy sketches kind of started coming about, was just started writing it down, and we kind of went from there. So.
And when was your last waltz?
January 2009, maybe?
Yeah, 2009.
And you didn't stop with comedy. You just thought it'd be fun to do that?
Well, actually, we did, we stopped doing the performances and stuff like that, because at the time, Aaron actually moved from Chicago out to L.A. back in 2009. We went out there for a few months at IO West and did a couple of months of shows. And then the other thing we did while we were out there was we tried to write a screenplay like everybody else in Los Angeles. So we always kind of had our eye on transitioning from like this comedy performance thing into more of like, what can we do that like actually get something produced? So our first attempt was to do a more like traditional comedy, like write a screenplay and everything. And, that, you know, that like many other screenplays, like it just is so hard to get your foot in the door with that type of thing. So we ended up trying different avenues and stuff. And then, one time Aaron, you know, he brought this up way back when was the first year that, we first started talking about like maybe a documentary? Was it 2010?
2010. I think it was like January 2010, I think, somewhere around there early.
Yeah. So 2010, I remember Aaron bringing it up to me, like, you know, what about a documentary? And like, what about a music documentary? This is what we love. This is what we watch all the time. And we know how to, you know, we think we know how it's done just by watching a lot of it. And, then he brought up, you know, and then what about Gil Manterra's Party Dream? Cause you know, they're so unique and so different, and we know how much we love them and how every time we see them again, we bring more people with us and they love them. So the idea was that initial kernel was like, these guys are this cult act and they're so inspiring to us. Let's bring that, you know, inspiration to a larger audience, if at all possible. So that was 2010. So we kind of like batted that around a little bit, and then things got in the way and, ended up putting on the back burner. But you know, we did all kinds of projects, and then you fast forward till late 2014, and then we picked it up again. Like Aaron brought it up. He's like, hey, you know, we keep doing all these different things. What if we took this really seriously and really went for the Gilman Terrace Party Dream documentary? And so, yeah, so we did decide to like really go for it. And step one was like, do a bunch of research. You know, I mean, we knew the band, but one thing about Gilman Terrace Party Dream is they purposely kept everything very mysterious about themselves. Like everything is an alias. It's almost like a wrestling tag team. Like they have these fake names and these fake personas, and they wear this crazy clothing. So you never get a real, and then when they would do interviews, they would also not use their real names. So you never get like a real sense for who the actual guys were. So the research was pretty important, because we're like, we don't even know who we're approaching here about a documentary. We just know their stage personas. So yeah, we were able to track down the lead singer. And step one was just asking, like, is this something, you know, you'd be interested in? Cause this is, here's our vision. Here's how we see it. And we want to get you guys out to a larger audience. And if he would have said no, you know, I mean, what can you do? I mean, I guess you can still make some type of documentary, but it wouldn't have been the same. But luckily right away he was all in and he said, yeah. Which, you know, thank God, cause years later we actually made the movie. But yeah, that's kind of how it all developed.
And you'd had the experience of seeing the band multiple times, like every time they came back to Chicago or whatever. And then like information, I'm just wondering, because now I'm kind of a fan of the band just because of you two. Like, did you even know when they broke up? Like, or did they just stop coming and you had no way, like, because they obviously didn't maintain, like they weren't doing press releases and they weren't like running a website for themselves, right?
Yeah, no, it was tough to, like Tim was saying, it was pretty tough to find information. And Tony, the drummer who came on later, he kind of talks about it in the film, but he's like, there was no last show. There was no official breakup. He's like, I think a tour ended and it kind of just dissolved. And that's, you know, that is exactly what happened. I think we found out that Glenn had moved to LA or something and Richie was in Youngstown. So we're like, they're probably broken up. I don't see how that would be working necessarily. But yeah, we just did a ton of research and like Tim said, Richie said yes. And you know, that was everything. We happened to catch him at a good time. Well, not a good time necessarily. Like in general, cause he was kind of down. But I just mean like, and you know, how everything just kind of worked out.
Yeah. If he already had, well, I don't know. I don't think we have to worry about spoilers, but if he'd already had his new venture going, he might've said, nah, that's, I don't need to talk about the band.
Right. Right. And yeah, I just wanted to say too, like from the fans' perspective, like from 2010 on, we didn't know, like, I mean, we obviously figured like something happened, like, but they were not, there was no, like you said, no press releases. There was no interviews. They purposely kept their stuff mysterious anyway. So it was just like this impenetrable thing. Like all of a sudden this band that we loved and had this cult status in the, especially in the Midwest, like all these people like us were like, what happened? Like, where are these guys? And it's funny, if you go to like YouTube videos of them, and you go to the comments, like over the years, now it's been 12 years since they broke up. So there's like 12 years worth of comments in like all these YouTube videos of people saying, what happened to them? Where are they? What's going on? Will they ever reunite? You know? So really until our documentary, which literally just came out, a lot of these people had no answers whatsoever. And we're just kind of always pining for this band that, you know, they once saw back in the day and would tell their friends about, like, oh, you got to see, this is the craziest thing ever. And then one day in 2010, it all just went away.
Yeah. So your first meeting with, it's funny, I did notice at the Q&A at the festival, because my first experience of the band was the documentary, I actually do think of them as Richie and Glenn, whereas everyone in the audience who was a Gil Manteris Party Dream fan stuck to Gil and Ultimate Donnie. Like to them, they are the characters. Like they don't even need to look behind the wall.
Yeah. And imagine approaching Ultimate Donnie, if that's all you know of him. Imagine like, okay, now we're going to go to Youngstown, Ohio, where this guy is from. And all we know of this guy is him on stage wearing, you know, Speedos and like, you know, swearing and saying all this funny stuff to the audience and doing all these antics on stage and drinking beers. And so that's what we have in our head. And now all of a sudden we're going, like, we didn't even really know his full real name. And here we are at his, and we go to his house in Youngstown. So we were very like, not, I wouldn't say we were like worried or anything like that, but we really had no idea what to expect out of him. So,
yeah. And you too, like, well, so I was going to say real quick, Jeff, just like when we first met him too, we had not seen him as, you know, Ultimate Donnie in 5 years. So it was really surreal. It was shocking almost like, I don't know, like seeing a ghost in a way, if that makes any sense. It was like just very weird, in a cool way, I guess, if that makes sense. But yeah, the first time we met him at a bar that his buddy owned. It's a building on the main street in Youngstown. And we just had a couple of beers, kind of, you know, he's feeling us out. He doesn't know us. We're feeling him out. And then he took us on a tour of the whole building. And from that point on, we were all good. You know, we fit in really well with Richie. We got along with him really well. And it was super fun to shoot all his interviews and hang out with them. You know, it was fun.
So when he said yes, did you two look at each other and like go back to a hotel and say, fucking hell, we got to make a movie? Like had you created a plan, or was him saying yes where you like, okay, I guess we got to hit the ground running?
Yeah. I mean, we went through the proper channels, right? We tried to contact their old manager, agent, all these people, and they were just all dead ends. And so eventually we got to the point where we're like, we don't know what else to do except hit them up on Facebook. And that's what we did. You know, I hit them up and I was like, hey man, my buddy and me have an idea to do a documentary about you and your brother if you're down. And then he got back, I don't know, not too much later, and said, yeah, cool, let's do it. And I was like, what? I was literally shaking. My mom had me in time because it was like the holidays. I was shaking. I was freaking out. I was like, oh my God, because the fact that he just responded, again, we had not heard from him in 5 years. The fact that he responded to us was crazy. And the fact he said yes, yeah, I called Tim right away. Yeah, we were freaking out. Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah. So the first step after that was, luckily, like my music writing career kind of came in handy at that point, because step one was go to Youngstown, Ohio and interview him. Cause he agreed to do it pretty much right away. So it was really about like sitting down and like coming up with like a super long list of questions of like all the stuff we ever wanted to know about this band, which was a lot of things. Like even if they'd never broke up, there was so much that we didn't know about them. So yeah, that was step one. It was just doing it one step at a time. You know, we had a general idea for what we wanted to do, but I think, you know, we'd be lying if we said, oh yeah, this was like some master vision. It was more about like, all right, let's start here. Step one is Youngstown, and let's get these interviews with Richie. Let's have him get to know us and start trusting us and stuff like that. Let's build a rapport and then kind of see where it goes from there. And that first weekend, luckily, like Aaron said, it was a blast. And it's funny, we went into it not knowing the guy. And, you know, 3 days later, we were all buddies hanging out, like ordering pizza at his house and drinking beers and listening to music together. And so it was really kind of like a dream come true. It's like this band that you loved and saw back in the day. And then next thing you know, you're basically friends with the lead singer. So it was kind of a cool experience. But only step one in the very long process.
By the way, Tim, you let a nugget out there. So you had a music, you just mentioned a music writing career. So you did some like music journalism kind of stuff.
Yeah. Like basically, for about 10 years, I did a lot of like online music writing. I did some editing as well. And the funny part is one of the bands that I wrote about for a publication called Chicago Interview was Gil Manteris Party Dream. They were coming into town and our editor was like, you know, saying, all right, here's the list of people who are coming into town this month. And I'm like, I'm going to write about these guys. Cause I had already seen them. He's like, okay, cool. So I did this write up about them And the cool part was a few years later, we saw them in Los Angeles do a show, and we saw them actually before the show. They were just kind of hanging out, drinking beers in the audience. And we got the nerve up to approach them and talking to them a little bit, just kind of random stuff. And I had mentioned like, yeah, I actually wrote this article about you a few years ago. And Richie knew right away which one it was. He was like, oh, you're the one who compared us to like Iggy Pop, David Lee Roth, and, you know, the Replacements is what I said. I said, if you like took Iggy Pop, David Lee Roth, and the Replacements and kind of mashed them together, that's what you're in for with Gilman Terrace Party Dream. So he remembered like the three references that I wrote about. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's like my favorite thing I've ever seen written about us in all our years. So I was like, that was a huge compliment to me. And it was really cool how it kind of came full circle, like writing about them and then meeting him and him talking about it. And then, yeah, years later, I did a ton of interviews over the years with musicians. So I kind of went into it knowing what my approach was going to be and the type of things I wanted to talk about with them. So I definitely think that came in handy.
Yeah. That's huge that you had that experience going into this.
Yeah. And half of the battle when you do these interviews with people is just like showing that you're not an idiot, really. I mean, it's really just people want to know that you kind of have your act together and you're taking them seriously. But also that you're a real person on the inside and you're not just like some hack or whatever who's there to just write the story and get out of there. I think once you like build that kind of rapport and just show like, I'm not here, I don't have an agenda, I'm not here to do anything crazy, I'm just really interested in you. And if your questions show that, then you can pretty quickly like get on the same page as somebody. And luckily we did with Richie early on.
For sure. In fact, I can confess as a music nerd for my 5+ decades, every time I read an article in like a major publication about a band I loved, I was furious at how clearly ignorant of the music the person writing that article was, I can name some bands that I saw, but like, I was just always pissed off with most music journalism because they don't give a shit and they're just whatever. They're just doing a job.
Yeah. It's super boilerplate. Like the descriptions, you can tell right away, like if they describe them in just a very generic way, it's like, all right, well, this person like hasn't really even seen the band. So what's the point?
And I think too, for us, like when we were filming the interviews, a little pat on our backs, like pretty much everybody that we had talked to in an interview, like, oh, hey, you guys going to get some beers later? We're like, oh, okay. Yeah. Maybe we'll go meet up, you know, like we ended up being cool with everybody, which was, an added benefit, especially with Tim's skills and his interview skills, you know?
No, but Aaron's right that's the other thing we kind of pride ourselves on is being like regular, fun dudes to just hang out with. You know, we try to create that atmosphere of like, hey, we're just having a good time here. Like, you know, grab a couple of beers, let's hang out. We're just like shooting the shit. And if you can create that atmosphere, it only, it helps the movie big time.
Yeah. I mean, I'd have to assume knowing that and knowing about your comedy background too, that's one reason, yet another reason why the film is so entertaining to watch, even on repeat, I tell you, on repeated viewings. And it probably is that the friendliness of the atmosphere within it.
Yeah. I mean, that's just how Tim and I are. And, you know, improv is all about lifting the other person up and teamwork and lifting each other up. And, that's it. Yeah. We try to create that as best as possible for sure.
Well, one thing that Aaron brings up a lot too, just when we talk about this kind of stuff is timing. And so much of editing is timing, you know, like when do we cut out on a scene and when do we come in? Can we end like on a funny note and go to the next thing? So that's a big part of it too. Like you learn some kind of comedic timing. And I think that does transfer over when you're doing the editing process, like into your transitions and stuff like that. You always want to keep it entertaining and flowing. And, you know, if you can end on a joke, all the better.
Yeah. I mean, like back in the day when we were editing, it's just crazy how something, a picture coming in 1 second sooner for whatever reason is just way funnier than waiting another second. So I think a lot of that helped us, with the editing here as well, for sure.
Oh yeah. Well, you guys know what I thought of your editing. I mean, at the festival, I looked at that crowd of people who really just cared about the band. I'm like, I know you guys love the band, But trust me, this film was so well made and so well edited, because there could, it's really, actually, it's a really tall order to make something that's feature length, that keeps the audience's interest for the full hour and a half. I mean, honestly, it's a really rare bird.
Yeah, well, we've actually been saying that a lot in this last year, especially like looking back on everything. Like, we picked maybe the hardest possible thing that we could have like ever picked, like a music documentary, meaning like you got to clear the music, you got to clear the footage, and then you got to like go do interviews and find a way to tell a story while also incorporating concert footage and all this stuff. And it's like, I tell people this all the time, but like, if you would have told me now, like, everything we would have had to do to actually finish this thing, I would be like, no way, there's no way I'm doing this. But like, that's kind of, thank God I didn't know that. You kind of go in kind of naive, but in a good way, where it's just like I said earlier, just let's get to step one. All right, now what do we do? What's next after the, who's the next person to interview, and what's the next thing to find? So
yeah, it's kind of putting one foot in front of the other, you know? If you try to say, we're going to do all of this, you'll never get going, you know? And that was a big reason why Tim and I never, ever put anything on social media about us doing this movie. For us, it was put our heads down, do the work. At one point, this will be done, and then we can tell everybody about it. And that's what we did. You know, we weren't tooting our own horns this whole time. So,
yeah, I mean, there's a serious, seriously refreshing lack of male egos from both of you. Not to be so gender and binary focused, but you know, it's a dude band anyway. But you know what I mean, like. Like, there's no effort on your behalves to self-promote through the project in a way. You know what I mean? Like, you're not looking to lift yourselves up, and that's clear.
Yeah, well, we've always known from the start of this, we're first-time filmmakers, and this is really a true passion project. And we didn't have anybody backing us. It's not, you know, everyone's always surprised to hear, like, oh, wait, so you guys went into this, like, without, like, a production company, like, giving you a bunch of money or, you know... Or like, I think people think maybe we had like some big trust fund that we've been using, but we've just always just kept it as simple as we could and try to make this thing work in the best way we can. So yeah, I think it's because we're first timers that, you know, a lot of times you don't know what to expect and you're really just hoping for the best. Like, you know, there's no guarantee even after all this work that this thing would have worked out. So the fact that it did, is just like, I can't tell you the joy that makes us feel after all these years working and planning for it. And, you know, sometimes doubting yourself because you are a first time filmmaker and all the hurdles you have to jump over because you don't have a lot of backing and you don't know a ton of people and your foot is not in every door. So yeah, the fact that we were able to kind of persist, is, you know, what makes this whole thing, the whole experience worth it.
Was it the love of the music that kept you going for all 5 years?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, this is our all time favorite live band. Yeah. You know, my family was in town this past week and we watched it on Friday night. And as soon as it was done, my cousin's like, blast some Bill Mantara's Party Dream, you know, and we were, and yeah, they're awesome. You know, and one of our things too, I think for Tim and me, it's like, we're really big on giving recognition to people that we think should have been bigger. So that was a really, really big component of this. Yes, we love the band and all that, but it just happens too often where there's these tributes and whatever they are after a person dies. And it's like, fuck that, man. Like, the person should know now how special they are and why people love them. And to get that now, because a lot of people need that. A lot of people don't know that. So Richie, I think Richie knows now, though. Mm-hmm. We've been getting some really, really good responses, and he's been telling us he's been getting some good responses too. So it's been really cool.
Yeah, and I think just to make it personal as well, you know, when you do creative stuff, like whether it's freelance music writing or starting a sketch comedy group, or lots of other things that we tried, writing a screenplay. There's a lot of starts and not a ton of finishes. So we were always, both of us were always looking for that thing. Like, what's going to be our thing that we can like actually see it through all the way and, you know, make an accomplishment. And I think this for both of us was the one. Once we got rolling on this, there was no choice to like, never did it ever occur to me that we were going to stop or not see it through to the end. Like, it wasn't even, that was never something we even talked about. Cause I think we both had that drive to like, this is a great idea. This is a great band. We both are completely passionate about it. We're both on the same page as how we see this thing shaken out. So from now on, it's just hard work. And that's, luckily we were both able to commit to that and stay through it.
And was it basically like a, I'm going to assume that it was like a, like a part-time job for 5 years.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like you squoze it into your spare, like into your personal time.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Tim and I both had our jobs. You know, Tim's a stay-at-home dad. I was bartending at a restaurant. So, you know, unfortunately, you got to have other stuff going on and you kind of do this when you can. And that's, you know, big reason why it took so long is because we had other stuff going on.
Yeah, but probably worked out well, right? So that they weren't overwhelmed and it gave you the time to do it right.
It did. But at the same time, you know, especially when Richie didn't have Penguin City, and he was kind of, this is before that time, I think we did feel a little bit of pressure to get this out because we were hoping it was going to help him out, you know, once it came out. But, you know, it didn't work out that way. You know, it took us a little bit longer. So, but it all worked out in the end.
For sure. And as you went along, I think you said that you were doing editing as you went along. Like, was it just feeling good the whole way? Like, were you loving what you saw?
Oh, yeah, the footage and all that. Yeah, no, it was, that's like one of the most exciting parts. You know, it's, let's see these interviews, let's see what we got. And then going through all the live footage, that's also really fun, you know? And then trying to take all of that and start, you know, whittling it down and down and down and down. But, you know, this was our first film. And like Tim said, we've written a screenplay before. We know story structure. But the documentary, it's like you have to figure out what the story is, you know? So it's like looking at all of this and going, okay, we know the story kind of goes like this, but we have some other things here. How does that all fit in? And it's just a massive puzzle. Like I always say, it's like the world's most difficult puzzle. There's 10,000 solutions. The puzzle pieces can change or not change depending if you want to do that or not. And you're just trying to find what is the like correct combination, you know? So that can kind of drive you nuts sometimes, trying to figure out exactly how to make it work, you know? But when you do have that breakthrough, it's really, really cool.
Yeah. And one of the big things we learned through this whole process is kind of let the story come to you, which you can do with a documentary. And you probably should do, quite frankly, because we could have had some, you know, preconceived idea of like, well, no, it's this, we're telling this story. But what was nice is we were able to take our time with it, like you said, and it kind of developed on its own over the years to where it was just like, well, it's natural. Like, this is what the story is. We're just going to tell it like how it's actually unfolded over the years. Instead of like trying to put our imprint on it or, make it something it wasn't.
For sure. And I kind of feel like you struck gold because not only was the band great, but the story behind the band was great. Like, their personal story could have been less compelling. They could have been, you know, casual friends or this or that, or, you know, or the family dynamics actually, I think, added a lot. And you didn't know about that till you got in.
No, we didn't. You know, it's funny because like when we would go see Gil and Donnie, you know, Ultimate Donnie would talk to me between songs and he'd go, this is my brother Gil. Like, there's no way these guys are brothers. You know, Richie's got long, you know, brown curly hair. Glenn's is blonde and straight. But he would always say my brother Gil. So we actually didn't know what the relationship was until we actually asked him. So what is the actual relationship? Oh, we're stepbrothers. Like, ah, okay. Now that makes a little bit more sense, you know? So that's part of the discovery, you know, of the documentary. It's super fun. But we asked him too. And he's like, we're stepbrothers. We're like, well, when did you guys, you know, when did your parents get married? And I think he says in the movie, he's like, I think he was like one. Like, oh, so you guys are like brothers. You're not like, it's not like the Brady Bunch where they all, you know, got married and they're already, you know, high school or something. They got together when Glenn was one. So, I mean, they're not blood, but for the most part, they are.
Yeah, which makes the story, I mean, honestly, the personal stuff is about as I guess what I'm getting at is the band is incredibly entertaining and that story is great. And then, yeah, the family dynamic story and the relationship between the brothers. And honestly, like, it's so fucking touching, really, how Richie took Glenn under his wing, like, you know, a kid. Two kids just like watching out for each other as they're growing up. Like that's, I mean, I find it really a really emotional story.
Yeah. And like Aaron said, Glenn was one and, Richie was eight. So he was, you know, kind of much older. So he was able to kind of be that older brother figure for Glenn. And we show that in the movie and stuff like that, their whole journey of growing up and getting into different styles of music together and then eventually starting the band. But yeah, that's what we learned through all the interviews, and that our documentary kind of became a two-track thing. It was, there's always going to be the music and the concert footage and all that stuff, but we always wanted more than that. Like, we could have just done like, hey, look at how crazy these guys were live, and here's a bunch of their music and stuff like that. But we wanted more than that, and luckily, when through the interviews, we found this super compelling backstory, like you said, about these two brothers that grew up together and then started this band together and, you know, went through all these crazy things together. So we're really happy that the movie, the other half of the movie is about that, about like this familial bond and how it kind of falls apart, but then you see where it goes, you know, towards the end.
Yeah. It's kind of weird. Friday, like I said, family in town, we watched it and, there's a part towards the end where Richie is talking about the band breaking up and he says, I'm just a loser doing loser shit. There you have it. And then he looks off and man, I don't know why, but it like crushed me on Friday watching it. Like I got kind of emotional seeing Richie being that like just devastated that this wasn't a thing. Tony talks about in the movie. He's like, yo, Glenn will be like whatever. But for Richie, this was like his life. And, you know, being around him and seeing him in Youngstown walking around, like we get it, you know, like it's really tough to watch. But he comes out of it, which is part of the fun thing about the story. You know, it's, he's down for a bit, meets Aspasia, and man, like, you know, when we first met him, they were not together. And when we first met her, as a matter of fact, he didn't tell us they were boyfriend and girlfriend, all that stuff in the movie. You know, we were just bullshitting with her. We had the camera going, find out that they were living together. And then, which eventually turns into Penguin City Brewery. And it's just mind blowing, you know, like his story is just awesome. The way it ended up working out.
And I'm going to assume it's because you were together, you were music documentary connoisseurs of a sort, and you'd watched enough of it to know that the more depth you add, the better it is for the viewer.
Yeah, right. Like, well, we had mentioned The Last Waltz earlier, and, you know, please don't say we're comparing ourselves to Martin Scorsese here. That's not the point. But that's like, you know, that's a classic where there's the performance aspect of it, which is amazing, and they have all these special guests come out and do that, but just as important is like the behind the scenes stuff where, you know, it's literally Scorsese backstage a lot of times, like interviewing all the different members of the band, and you get like a much more intimate feeling for these guys and their relationship, so that when you cut back to them playing live together on stage, it just adds all that depth to it, like you feel like you know these guys, which, and then you start to root for them in a way. So it really, the music feeds all that stuff as well. Like it goes back and forth.
Absolutely. And so you wrap it up. Remind me, how long ago did you lock picture and whatnot?
Last
November.
Yeah.
So it was about a year from locking it down to getting it out to the public.
Yeah. So last November, 2021, we finally, finished, finished our post-production, had a lot of help with that. That wasn't just us. We had some great people come on board, to help us, you know, graphics and sound mix and post-production. We had a really good team of three people that came on and really helped us get it across the finish line. But then we learned that was not the finish line. It's like, okay, we made this thing. It's quote unquote finished, but you know, now we actually have to get people to see it. And how are we going to do that? So we spent most of 2022 trying to figure that, that was a whole, you know, very long process of trying to figure out how are we going to get this out there? Cause otherwise it's like, yeah, great. We made a movie, but what's the point? You know, we need people to actually see it now.
Yeah. It's like, you know, making the movie we thought was the toughest part, and it was a very, and it was very tough, but yeah, then it transitions into this whole other thing of like, now what, you know, and we did our due diligence, you know, we did a lot of research. We talked to a lot of filmmakers and we just kind of try to pick everybody's brain and try to figure out and navigate the next part of this whole thing. And, you know, it's completely different than making the movie. But we got, you know, we got a distribution deal and that was the main goal of all this. And it's out there now. It's wild, man. It's really, really crazy. It's really cool and surreal, but yeah, it's finally out there.
It's out there. And did you do much of a festival run or?
We did, we got it to three. So we submitted to, I forgot how many, I don't know.
15, I think we submitted to like 10. Yeah. And we got into three, and two out of those three, one of which thanks to you guys at Sherman Oaks, two out of the three, we won best feature documentary. So that our festival run ended up being a lot of fun, cause we got such great response and people really, really loved the movie. So it was really nice to, be able to participate in that. Cause that's, you know, so much of it is such hard work. And you, like I said earlier, you never know, you know, how it's going to end up and are people going to actually see this thing? So when you get the opportunity to go to a film festival and, you know, now to pump you up a little bit, like Sherman Oaks, was definitely our favorite experience because it was so welcoming and it really made because we talked to other filmmakers as well, but I know for myself, it made you feel special. Which might sound silly or trite, but it's really not because you work so hard for so long and it's so nice to get acknowledgement from the outside world and say, no, yeah, this is actually good. Like you guys did a good job and like you get to show up and it gets celebrated, you know, with a big group of people and, you know, there's nothing like that. You get to sit there and watch your movie that you made with a crowd of people and then get people to congratulate you for it. It's like, you know, there's nothing better than that.
Well, I mean, it's well deserved. Like I think I said something along these lines at your Q&A when you said something nice like that, which is, you know, if you saw all the films that don't get into the festival, the 700 plus that, oh boy, like it is special when, you know, when everything, Lord knows everything you have, it takes skill, talent, and luck, right? For a film to come out right. I mean, without luck, the most talented people in the world still need some good fortune to have a, because so many things can go wrong with a film. So when everything comes out great, it really, what can I say? Obviously I'm into celebrating it because, you know, I also suffer and watch all those films where everything didn't come out right.
Well, I mean, look at Gil Manterra's Party Dream. Like they kind of didn't have luck, you know, that was one thing. We always thought that they should have been bigger than they were. And that they say in the movie that, you know, every time we thought we were going to get to that next level, it just, we couldn't make it, or we didn't know the right people, or we couldn't get booked in the right place, or we couldn't get reviewed in the right publication, you know? And I think a lot of that is luck. Like we had somebody just on Twitter the other day made a comment saying, hey, love the movie. And one thing it got me thinking about was how many bands are there out there where this kind of thing happens, where like they're really good and they have people that love them, but for whatever reason, they never get to that next stage. And you can use that for filmmakers. You can use that for pretty much anything, really. Like you do need that final component of luck where like the right door opens at the right time and you're able to walk through it.
No, it sure as hell is not a meritocracy. The arts are not a meritocracy because I mean, as I was, like I said, I was a huge music nerd and I spent all my 20s in clubs and that's why my ears ring at night. And it's like the bands that made it were not necessarily the best. It was a little bit of magic, a little bit of luck. And I don't know, I can't even put my finger on it. But yeah, when you compare Richie /Ultimate Donnie to a David Lee Roth type, I'm like, yeah. And he is like, the rarest fucking beast on earth, which is a front man, an entertainer who can get on stage and just win you over. And most bands don't have that.
Yeah, no, I mean, Richie's legit charismatic, you know, like he is a front man, and even just hanging out with him, he, you know, he's like the mayor of Youngstown. Everybody knows Richie and everybody loves Richie. And he's just like a good dude. And he's, yeah, he's super fun to hang out with, but he definitely has that charisma that you definitely need as a front man. And you can't teach that. You got it or you don't. And he's got it.
All right, so I think we discussed this at the Q&A as well, but or maybe, no, it was in the lobby of the theater, I think. But so has this, what's in the future for merchandise? You two are all about making another documentary, or you want to do other things? What's on your minds?
Yeah, actually, we'd love to keep doing music documentaries specifically. And we do have something that is kind of coming together like as we speak. We were actually just talking about it right before we got on the podcast, which we can't really talk about yet because it might, you know, how these things go, it might just all fall apart. But we can say it would be another music documentary. It would be a very different band from Gilman Terra's Party Dream. But if it all comes together, like we're hoping it will, I think people would really like it. So yeah, kind of same vein, but not this type of band.
Because there is no band like Gilman Terra's Party Dream possible to make anything close to that ever again.
For sure, for sure. No, I admit, I was like, I got suckered into it because there was that conversation in the theater lobby. I think one of you two said to someone else in the lobby, well, what band would you do next? People started throwing out names. And I probably spent like, I don't know, the next week, every once in a while in a quiet moment, I'd be like, oh, they should do Minutemen. Oh, they should do Fishbone. Like I couldn't stop thinking of those smaller bands that I loved when I was younger that like deserve people to know who they are, you know?
No, like you said, there's a ton of them out there, you know, an absolute ton. And again, that's one of our favorite things is getting those people pumped up and everybody should know about them. No, you love that.
Yeah. The hard part though is finding that sweet spot of, there's that band that is not overexposed. Like, you know, we're not going to go do like a Led Zeppelin documentary or whatever. So you got to find like the right band that, and that is also willing to do it. But then the most important thing of all is something that we are passionate about, because it's a lot of hard work and it's a lot of time. So if you're not passionate about it, if you're just doing like a job for hire for 7 years, I mean, it doesn't work. You got to really be all in on it. So that's kind of what we've been trying to figure out over the past year, especially.
Yeah. And, you know, part of this too, sorry, Jeff, I was going to say real quick, part of this too for us was like, you know, cause we love this band so much. Were we going to get sick of these guys listening to Gilman Terra's Party Dream? Or, you know, like stop liking these guys. And it's like been the opposite. I somehow love these guys even more now, you know? And I think I said at the Q&A, the one negative of this is, you know, their songs are permanently ingrained in my brain 24 hours a day, waking up in the middle of the night. I got Elmo's Wish playing. I wake up in the morning, I got Elmo's Wish playing. So there's a little bit of a curse to it, but a good curse, I guess.
Definitely earworms. That's a tribute. Yeah. To the songwriting. It's very easy with a band that is that theatrical to ignore the songwriting, but like shit, when I was younger, like I dug the Tubes, and like the Tubes were this massive show. But the truth is, when you sat down with the album, it was actually good songwriting too.
Yeah. And that's been like the other great thing to come out of this, and what we had hoped for going in, was all these people contacting us and saying, you know, number one, love the documentary, which that's great. But number two, and even better in a way, is I'd never heard of these guys, and now I love them, and now I'm listening to them, and I'm telling my friends about them. And I mean, that was your experience, Jeff, which we really appreciated. Like, we love hearing that kind of thing, because that's the initial germ of the idea, was like, let's get people to see and hear these guys. And seeing them is kind of the easy part, like, because they're so crazy, like, that's the fun part. But then the nice thing after that is people go, but wait a minute, like, there's actually something to this music, and it's actually good. And then people want to like find out where it is and listen to it. And that's been such a fun process.
I had a dumbass question on my head, so I'll just throw it. So if a David Lee Roth type saw Party Dream and said, I'm hiring those two to make a documentary, would you take it?
Oh, hell yeah. We love David Lee Roth. Fuck yeah, man. Actually, that's a great idea, Jeff. We should somehow contact David Lee Roth because that would be awesome. Yeah, and Richie's a fan of him as well, so that's kind of cool.
I love him too. I'm one of those, I don't know why, but I pretty much only like the first singer of every band, whether it's Black Sabbath or Van Halen or AC/DC, whatever. It's like, as soon as the singer changes, I'm out.
Yeah. DLR or bust. We're with you.
Yeah. We're with you on that one. We're not Sammy Hagar fans.
Me either. I don't need those records. I will, as long as we got a little time left, I know there's got to be some people you want to name check and like thank for their contributions and help. Or is it list? I know with the documentary, it's so long, but.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, well, of course, you know, Richie, AKA Ultimate Donnie, huge, huge thank you to him. He's, you know, been nothing but good to us, giving us his time and all that kind of stuff. His wife, Aspasia, has been super, super cool. You know, being a participant in this as well and helping us get some stuff together. But we have two co-executive producers, there's no way this thing would be coming out right now if it wasn't helping them. Leo A. Kovalik Jr. He came on last year, and then Cal Passero came on fairly recently, but they both were huge in helping us get this out there for sure.
Well, and speaking of luck, because that's what that is, like these two guys came in at very opportune moments where, you know, we didn't know what we were going to do next to finish the movie. Because like we said, we weren't backed by a lot of people. We're not like sitting on a pile of money. So we would not have been able to do it without those guys coming in at very specific moments in the process and kind of get us over the hump to the next stage. So yeah, those two for sure. And then, you know, obviously wife and friends and family, but, there's also like our post-production team led by, Melissa Burns, she's made a bunch of movies herself. And she was a huge help in like coordinating all the post stuff. Cause you know, we taught ourselves a lot of stuff over this process. But you know, we're not graphics guys. We're not sound mix guys. We're not, you know, super great on all the technical and a lot of the technical aspects, like, or being a colorist or that type of thing. So, she was huge in, getting all that stuff together. And again, getting us over the hump in that area as well.
Yeah. And she had our sound guy was awesome. This guy, David Murray, he was in a band back in the day. So what he did with the sound, man, we first heard it for the first time in the theater. It felt like we were back at a show, and that's the feeling we want to give to people. So that was great. Brandon Kelly's our graphics guy. And then our editor, Gabe Cullen, helped us out big time as well. So yep. that was like our post team, I guess you could say.
Yeah. And now you two are official filmmakers. You can drop the first time if you want, but, or keep using it. Cause I guess it makes more, and you're like ranked in iTunes and such. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I'm catching you at a good moment.
It's surreal. It's really great. Yeah, we've said that to each other. Like once we got the distribution deal, we were having a conversation about it. And we were like, we can actually call ourselves filmmakers now. Like this is really cool. And we wouldn't be lying. Like we, we made a film and now we got distribution and, we're at film festivals and it's like the real deal. So yeah, there's no better feeling than being able to say that. And it's true.
Yeah, I mean, for the past thing, you know, for the whole time making this, you know, like we didn't tell people that. We didn't say, hey, we're producers, we're directors, because it just, again, we just want to put our heads down, do the work, and when this is done, then we can call ourselves a producer and a director, and now we can. So it's official.
You are the real deal. And hey, I applaud you.
Thanks, Jeff. You've been super cool, man, and helping, you know, champion this movie and yeah, we appreciate it, man.
And I normally wrap up the podcast like naming a bunch of shit, but besides telling people to Google Party Dream and Party Dream movie, anything else you want to put out there? Or people to follow?
I think that's it. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, Party Dream Movie. If you see it, please help spread the word. Word of mouth is huge for us. Again, first time filmmakers and yeah, get the word out.
All this that awesome. I've learned from other filmmakers, which is apparently, if you're listening to this, first of all, please shell out the money, get Party Dream while it's VOD. And then don't just give it 5 stars. I know, like, asking for 5 stars. First of all, you're going to give it 5 stars, but write a review and write comments, because I'm told that that is huge with the algorithms.
Yes. Yes, for sure. Yeah. On Amazon, for sure. That's a big one. We've been doing really well there so far. Like, they featured us on their homepage the other day, which we were, you know, we're up there with Yellowstone and a bunch of other stuff. And we were like, oh, that's really cool. Does that ever really happen? And our marketing guy was like, not really, not for, you know, low budget independent films. So he said there's something going right with the algorithm there where people are liking it. And that just helps it get out there more and more. And yeah, for people like us, that's the whole ball game. We need as much help as we can possibly get, because, you know, we don't know a ton of bigwigs. So it's really like getting the audience, if they love it, to get out there and review it and say nice things and tell a friend, because all of it helps.
Yeah, I mean, my assumption, not that you need this explanation, but I think it's a natural, right, that there was hundreds, if not a couple thousand people in every city that this band played over their 6-7 year touring career, that those people are out there, and you had that built-in love for this film of they were going to rent it right away and review it and give it 5 stars. So that little bump, thank God, man, that's wonderful that was enough to get you on that homepage. And once you're there, you know, I got friends who see my sharing it on Facebook and they're like, I'm watching this because they're in spandex. Like, I had a friend say,
Sold.
She's like, cute boys in spandex, I'm in.
Yeah. Well, anything we can use to market the movie, whatever it takes you to get you to watch it, that's fine by me.
Absolutely. All right. Well, my closing spiel is I'll do the quick version, which is, thank you, everyone, for listening to the Discover Indie Film Podcast. If you want to learn more about the podcast, just go to discoverindiefilm.com. On social media, it's at DIFWINS. Side note, if you love indie film, this podcast gave birth to a TV series that's on Amazon Prime Video. So just watch Party Dream and then also check out Discover Indie Film, the TV series. It's just... it's the best short films from the festival circuit, just kind of handpicked from the festival circuit. So it's like going to a film festival without leaving home. And we talked about Sherman Oaks Film Festival. I'll mention it's every November. And if you want to learn more, it's ShermanOaksFF.com. And it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. And there is a sister festival every June. That's Film Invasion Los Angeles. You can learn about it at FilmInvasionLA.com. And it's at FilmInvasionLA on social media. And Falcon, I'll mention one last thing. I'm glad you guys got your distribution deal. This probably won't be for you, but because I'm glutton for punishment, I'm now part of a new thing called Hi TV. So if you have a smart TV, check out Hi TV. It's Hi TV is a smart TV app of content films that are wonderful to watch when you're high. And I've never watched Party Dream. I have not watched Party Dream after having edibles, but I promise you I will someday. And it might be the best time. I don't know. Probably won't compare to the theater, but other than that,
you'll have a good time. Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you both so much.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me.
I'll be a semi-pro podcaster and say thank you, Aaron Hagel and Tim Slowakowski, and best of luck to you both, man. I hope this is the first of many, many films.
Yeah, us too. We appreciate that, for real, man. Like, you know, independent filmmakers starting out, who is this one? And somebody gave us a chance, and you gave us a chance, and you know, got our film in the film festival, and we appreciate that.
Sounds excellent. All right, well, thank you both, and thank you everyone for listening.